Now, you're listening to The Music Show on RN Radio Australia and online. I'm in the Iwaki Auditorium of the ABC's Southbank Centre in Melbourne. It's the Melbourne Writers' Festival. One of the guests at the Writers' Festival is Anna Goldsworthy. Anna Goldsworthy, of course, is not just a writer. She's come off a tour of piano lessons, the stage show in which she was acting herself, playing herself. She's about to embark upon the Seraphim Trio's last tour of the year. Anna is the pianist in the Seraphim Trio. After that, she goes to the Port Fairy Spring Festival, where she is the director, the artistic director of the festival, and that's before she becomes a librettist in Victorian Opera's Magic Pudding, which is on in October with music by Calvin Bowman. She also finds time to be a mother and to write a book about it. But now she's going to play the piano for us. This is from Debussy's Children's Corner, The Little Shepherd. Anna Goldsworthy playing The Little Shepherd from Children's Corner by Debussy. Welcome to Your New Life is the title of Anna Goldsworthy's latest book. I think a lot of people thought you had been quite revealing of yourself, unsparing of yourself in Piano Lessons, the first book. That was only the warm-up act, really, wasn't it, in terms of self-revelation?
Yeah, I think you're right, Andy, and I suspect this book might have been more difficult for me to write if I hadn't already, I suppose, rehearsed that level of self-revelation in Piano Lessons.
Yes. I mean, you seem, you know, we see this, Anna Goldsworthy on stage, and you look so self-possessed and in control, and this book is about not being self-possessed or in control.
Yes, this is the very dark underbelly. This is the chaos beneath.
Why did you want to write the book?
It's not even that I wanted to write the book, it's just that I found myself writing the book, I suppose. And a few reasons for that. One is that I love writing, and writing is a way that I make sense of the world, I suppose, as many writers would say. And so I was just sort of intuitively or naturally taking notes of this experience. Perhaps it's slightly pathological, but even after I'd given birth, first thing the next morning, I quickly wrote it down in my notebook so I wouldn't actually forget what that process was like.
I thought nature was supposed to allow you to forget what it was like.
I think it is, actually. Yeah, I think
so. You're cheating nature by writing it down. Really hurt.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I still managed to forget and went back to do it all over again a second time. But I suppose the other reason for me that was maybe even more central than just a sort of reflexive habit of writing about stuff was that, when you have a child, you surrender yourself so entirely, and you know, this chaos that we're talking about, you inhabit it completely. Your life fundamentally starts to lack all sense. And I think for me, trying to write this book was a way of clawing back, first of all, a sense of self, and secondly, I suppose, some sense of maybe narrative control over this new reality.
So it's like art, isn't it? Isn't that why we have art in our lives?
I think it might be.
To try and sort of make nice patterns and try and make sense and try and find some sort of order amongst the chaos.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So actually your answer is just the same as any writer's answer to that question, I suppose, isn't it?
I imagine so. Yeah, pattern seeking and probably, imposing an artificial order on the chaos. But I think this is what we always do with any sense of our own history, is we invent these narratives, and writing it down is, I think, just another level of that invention that we're all prone to do anyway.
I must say I really appreciate the lack of sentimentality in your writing in general, and in this book in particular, but especially when you look at the cover, and there's a baby's face, and a lovely baby's face with beautiful blue eyes and a slightly grumpy expression, but the fact that it's upside down, in a sense, tells you a little bit about what to expect in the book, because it's not actually a kind of goo goo gaga kind of book, is it?
No, it's not that. And I love the cover, actually. I think I was really taken with it when Black Ink sent it through to me. The design, I think, is really, really striking. And I think it does speak to what happens is your whole existence, as you know, Andy, gets turned upside down.
Yes, indeed. Yes. I have a three-year-old, and I thought I was... I used to think I was a busy man. And then I think that before my daughter came along, I was just frittering my time away. I had no idea what I was doing with it. I can't imagine, because now I spend a great deal of time doing things with her. And what was I using that time for before? I wasn't being productive enough.
Yeah, I share those feelings. I think I must have squandered. I always thought I was busy too. But yeah. that was clearly an illusion.
But there is a sort of time... I mean, we're going to be talking about Wagner and time distortion shortly. But there is a time-distorting aspect to parenthood as well, isn't there? Because you do spend on the face of it is like a waste of time. You know, I mean, playing with Lego, for instance. You know, it's not really. I mean, I don't feel as though I'm benefiting tremendously from building.
You never know, Andy. It's probably contributing to your next piece.
It could be, but and yet, you know, you also get the other things done on the whole.
Well, maybe it's that old cliche, you know, ask a busy person to do something and they'll find a way to do it. It could be that. I certainly find personally, I feel like I've become super efficient since I've had a child because, you know, creatively the option's no longer available to me of sitting down at the piano or sitting down in front of a blank page and waiting for inspiration. There's no room. There's no episodes of time in my life in which I can wait for inspiration. I just have to sit down and perform or do stuff. And in a curious kind of way, that's been a liberation for me. And it's, I think, having a child, you know, it's allowed me to get out of various habits I used to have, I think, of self-sabotage and procrastination. Those are luxuries that are no longer available. And to me, that's a very positive aspect of this.
Yes, I remember Brett Dean telling me that he'd learned to do 4 hours practice in 34 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. You know. You just have to play really, really fast.
It's a very funny book, Welcome to Your New Life. Would you tell us the story of the composting toilet?
I don't know if I can sum up the story of the composting toilet very, very well. But shortly after our first child was born, my partner Nicholas and I decided to go on a holiday, as if holidays were still possible. We sort of imagined that they were. And he found this beautiful holiday house, actually in Apollo Bay. And we turned up and it seemed utterly perfect until I went to the toilet and discovered that it was a long dropper, a composting toilet. And as soon as I saw it, I felt this sinister gravitational pull, and I was sure that somebody was going to drop my baby into it. Absolute certainty. There was no doubt in my mind that this was going to happen. And that came to obsess me over the course of this so-called holiday, to the extent that I couldn't actually sleep without this mantra going around and around in my head about who's going to drop the baby into the composting toilet. So in many ways, that's a story, that's a chapter about anxiety, which is also a theme I explored in my first book, Piano Lessons. But here it takes a really sort of berserk form, a kind of postnatal anxiety, I guess. And I don't think that ever really leaves you. I mean, I'm not sitting here agonising that someone's about to drop either of my sons down a toilet, but there's this sort of constant white noise in the background, isn't there, of worry about the child.
I suppose so, and that's just a sort of an extreme example of the things, that, or an unlikely example of things that might happen to your child.
Yeah. It's this hypervigilance that you're forced to develop as a new parent, and it's necessary because it ensures your child's survival, but it can certainly go too far, and every single situation that you find yourself in, you know, you start assessing for potential risks. And particularly if you're a slightly neurotic person to start with, I think this new level of anxiety can be quite something to deal with.
So how do you get your life back, Anna, as a pianist? I mean, we were talking with Andrew Goldsmith at the top of today's show about the figure of Ramsey, the selfish pianist. I mean, selfish in his daily life, not at the piano. Very very generous at the piano, but it's difficult, surely, to find time to practice if you have a baby.
It's difficult to find time to practice anyway. I think practicing the piano, nobody pays you by the hour. And we live in this time, we live in this era in which everyone is always pressed for time, myself included. And to try to carve out 4, 5, 6 hours a day, every day for practice it becomes more and more elusive. You mentioned the word selfish, and I think this is an interesting word. And I like the distinction you make between the character of Ramsey, who's not selfish at the piano, but he is elsewhere. And I suppose that's a paradox that kind of lies at the heart of the musician, of the interpretative musician, is that a degree of humility is necessary as you approach a score. I personally don't like performers who really, their ego comes first. There's a degree of surrender, I think, involved in interpreting music. And yet at the same time, there has to be some sort of selfishness that prioritises your work at the instrument above many other aspects of life. In my own case, I just let everything else, apart from my kids, and my family, I just let it all go to seed. Housework, forget it, social life, don't do that anymore. I'm hoping there'll be time in the future for some of those things. I suppose one's practice as a musician, it has to be something almost sacred. And it's this weird sort of undertaking, because you don't necessarily see a daily improvement. So sometimes it's much more seductive to just deal with emails and get the immediate gratification of that than to sit down and put in the long hours of working on Beethoven's Dear Belly variations or whatever you might be working on. So it's almost a matter of faith, as it is when you're a child and you first start practicing and your parents tell you practice makes perfect and you're not quite sure if you believe it. When you're an adult, you know it's true, but finding the time on a daily level certainly becomes more challenging.
And it's not just time, is it? It's concentration.
Yeah,
it's being able to think about,
absolutely,
about that. And then knowing what to do when you hear the little voice saying, mummy, mummy.
Oh, I can't practice with a child in the room. And you're quite right. This is something that I feel has maybe gone a bit missing in my life, is that sort of deep concentration. I think it's very easy for all of us these days to live this sort of fractured existences where we've got our smartphones and we're emailing someone and we're texting someone else and we're reading the latest news cycle. And it's just, I think, a nature of contemporary consciousness that we have this very broad, very shallow concentration going at all times. But this repertoire demands the opposite of that. It does demand this really deep, immersive, almost meditational degree of thinking. And motherhood as well, I think, can be very, very shallow. It's about, that dread word, multitasking. Well, I don't feel that multitasking has much use when you're at the piano. And the nature of my own life too, in which I'm juggling probably a few too many balls at the moment, means that it's very easy for me to be sitting there and suddenly having a rogue thought about what might work in my next festival program. And I consciously have to marshal my concentration and focus.
Do you write things down more?
Write everything down. Yeah, you know, I sent you an email this morning in the wee hours of this morning because I didn't think I'd remember it when I saw you. All memory gone.
Yes. What about creativity and children? I mean, some people say that having children is a creative as well as a biological act. How have you found your creativity or your imagination, perhaps I should say, changed by being the mother of two sons?
Well, I suppose, you know, you speak about the limitations of playing with Lego for long hours, but on the other hand, children are so, all of them, are so intrinsically creative, and a great deal of your time with them is given over to play. And I imagine that's probably, I haven't really thought about this much before, but I imagine that can only be a good exercise, a good sort of practicing of the creative muscle for any kind of artist, is the huge, and the wonderful analogies they come up with, the sort of inadvertent metaphors, things that you've never thought about before. All of this, I think, is quite lovely and in its way, quite inspiring.
Yes, they don't do cliches, do they?
No, they don't. And that's wonderfully refreshing.
I'm going to ask you to play for us again, and this time you're going to play something pretty bravura, and at the other end of the pianistic scale from Debussy's Little Shepherd. You're going to do the Rigoletto paraphrase by Verdi. Why did you choose this?
Why did I choose this? It's a lovely piece that I played when I was a teenager. In fact, it was probably my very first virtuosic piece, and I feel quite sentimental about it as a consequence. It's not the deepest piece of music, and yet I think it's a Liszt paraphrase, and it's Liszt in that sort of wonderful, generous mode of bringing the opera to the piano and mustering the piano's resources for the sake of Verdi and embellishing it, and yet somehow remaining so true to the original. And I think it's a masterful and exciting and glorious piece of music.
And it'll get us very nicely to the second half of this hour of the programme, because we're going to be talking about opera. So, Anna, thank you very much indeed for coming on the show and talking to me and for playing for us as well. And I hope you think I've been nice to you, because this afternoon in the Ryder Festival, and Anna's interviewing me, so I've tried to ask sort of really easy questions. I'm sure you will reciprocate.
You've been very kind, Andy. You'll just have to wait and see.
Anna Goldsworthy. The book is called Welcome to Your New Life. It's published by Black Ink. And Anna, I should have mentioned, is also the author of the latest quarterly essay about misogyny in public life, which is also published by Schwartz Publishing. Thank you. That was Anna Goldsworthy, and she was playing live on today's music show, Liszt's concert paraphrase on Verdi's Rigoletto. And today's music show is coming from the Iwaki Auditorium in the ABC South Bank Centre in Melbourne.